Episode 16, The Final Encounter. Count Dracula has fled London in the hopes of reaching safe haven in Transylvania. Van Helsing, Dr. Seward, Mina Harker, Jonathan Harker, Arthur Holmwood, and Quincy Morris have pursued the vampire and now hope to confront him at the Borgo Pass.
And so there it is. I believe he will take the River Sereth to where it joins the Bistrița, which winds up round the Borgo Pass.
It's logical, all right.
Madam Mina, your insight has saved our hunt, and perhaps your own soul. Now we are on the track once again, and this time we may succeed. Our enemy is at his most helpless, and if we can come on him by day, on the water, our task will be over.
I shall get a steam launch and follow him.
Good, Arthur. Good. And you, Quincy?
I'll travel with the horses, to follow on the bank if by chance he lands.
Good. Both good. But neither must go alone. There must be force to overcome force if need be. The Slovak is strong and rough, and he carries rude arms. John Seward, you will go with Quincy.
Very well.
And Arthur, you must not be alone. Mr. Harker shall be with you.
But my place is with Mina.
Be not afraid for Madam Mina. She will be in my care. I am old, but I can be of other service. I can fight in other way, and I can die if need be, as well as younger men. Now, let me say that what I would is this. While you, Arthur, and friend Jonathan go up the river, and whilst John and Quincy guard the bank where perchance he might be landed, I will take Madam Mina right into the heart of the enemy's country. Whilst the old fox is tied in his box, floating on the running stream whence he cannot escape to land, we, Madam Mina and myself, shall go in the track where Jonathan went, from Bistritz over the Borgo, and find our way to the castle of Dracula. Here, Madam Mina's hypnotic power will surely help, and we shall find our way.
Do you mean to say, Professor Van Helsing, that you would bring Mina, in her sad case and tainted as she is with that devil's illness, right into the jaws of his death trap? Do you know what that place is? Have you seen that awful den of hellish infamy with the very moonlight alive with grisly shapes and every speck of dust that whirls in the wind, a devouring monster and embryo? Have you felt the vampire's lips upon your throat?
Oh, my friend, it is because I would save Madam Mina from that awful place that I would go. God forbid that I should take her into that place, but that we are in terrible straits, and it must be so.
Do as you will. We are in the hands of God. November, evening, with Arthur. 3 days on the water, we have found nothing of the quarry we seek. I wonder where Mina is now, and Van Helsing. They should have got to Varesti about noon on Wednesday. It would take them some time to get the carriage and horses, so if they had started and traveled hard, they would be about now at the Borgo Pass. God guide and help them. Afraid to think what may happen. If we could only go faster.
4 November, with Quincy Morris. 5 days on the road. Very little news. Today we heard of the launch having been detained by accident when trying to force a way up the rapids. The Slovak boats get up all right by aid of a rope and steering with knowledge. Some went up only a few hours before. But Alming is an amateur fitter himself, and evidently it was he who put the launch in trim again. Finally, they got up the rapids all right, with local help, and are off on the chase afresh.
With Van Helsing. 4 days we have traveled, and at a good speed. The horses seem to know that they are being kindly treated, for they go willingly their full stage at best speed. Dr. Van Helsing is laconic. He tells the farmers that he is hurrying to Bistritz and pays them well to make the exchange of horses. We are traveling fast, and have no driver with us to carry tales. But I dare say that fear of the evil eye will follow hard behind us all the way. The professor comes to hypnotize me.
The sun begins to set. Come, my child. Rest here, by this tree.
I fear that it is you that should rest, Professor.
Oh, not I, Madam Mina. Yes, we pursue this devil with holy purpose. And yes, we face the gravest of dangers. But all of this, this chase, this cause... not since my youth have I felt such energy. But now, come. Look into the sunset. Look. See him rest. See him sleep. To sleep. Sleep. What do you see?
Darkness. The darkness of the grave.
Mm-hmm. And what do you hear?
Creaking wood and water. Roaring water.
And?
There is nothing else. Only the wood and the water and the darkness.
Very well. Wake, my child. Gently. Come back to me.
Is there any news?
The river is changing as they ascend. Nothing more.
Are we then on time?
By morning, we shall reach the Borgo Pass. The houses are very few here now. And the last horses we got will have to go on with us, as we may not be able to change. We shall get to the pass in daylight. We do not want to arrive before. So we take it easy, and each have a long rest in turn.
So now we rest and pray. Oh, what will tomorrow bring to us? We go to seek the place where poor Jonathan suffered so much. God grant that we may be well guided, and that he will deign to watch over my husband and those dear to us both, and who are in such deadly peril.
November 5, morning. I write this memorandum for Dr. John Seward. Let me be accurate in everything, for though you and I have seen some strange things together, you may at the first think that I, Van Helsing, am mad. All yesterday we travel, ever getting closer to the mountains and moving into a more and more wild and desert land. Madam Mina still sleep and sleep, and I could not waken her, even for food. I began to feel that the fatal spell of the place was upon her, tainted as she is with that vampire baptism. Then, ere the great dark came upon us, I took out the horses and fed them in what shelter I could. Then I make a fire. And near it, I make Madam Mina, now awake and more charming than ever, sit comfortable amid her rugs. Tonight will be cold.
As the dead know the cold grave.
Here is food. Take of it.
I'm not hungry.
As you say.
What are you doing?
I make the ring around you. See? ring around the rosy, yes?
What are you sprinkling?
To protect you, my child. In the ring, I sprinkle bits of the sacred wafer.
Oh, Professor. I am so frightened. So terribly frightened.
Have faith. All will be well. See? The ring around you is complete. When you rest tonight, you shall rest therein. But now, come here to me. Closer to the fire.
Very well.
Yes?
I cannot.
It is so. But as you cannot leave the ring, others may not enter. And so, though there might be danger to your body, your soul is safe.
You will not leave me.
No, my child. I will not leave you. Presently, the horses began to scream and tore at their tethers till I came to them and quieted them. When they did feel my hands on them, they whinnied low as in joy and licked at my hands and were quiet for a time. In the cold hour, the fire began to die. And in the dark, there was a light of some kind, and it seemed as though the snow flurries and the wreaths of mist took shape, as of women with trailing garments. I feared for my dear Madame Mina when these weird figures drew near and circled round. I looked at her, but she sat calm and smiled at me. When I would have stepped to the fire to replenish it, she caught me and held me back and whispered.
No, no. Do not go beyond the ring. Here you are safe.
But you... It is for you that I fear.
Fear for me? Why fear for me? None safer in all the world from them than am I.
As I wondered at the meaning of her words, a puff of wind made the flame leap up, and I see the red scar on her forehead. Then, alas, I knew. Did I not, I would soon have learned, for the wheeling figures of mist and snow came closer, but keeping ever without the holy circle. Then they began to materialize, till there were before me in actual flesh the same three women that Jonathan saw in the room when they would have kissed his throat. Swaying round forms, the bright hard eyes, the white teeth, the ruddy color, the voluptuous lips. They smiled ever at poor dear Madame Mina, and as their laugh came through the silence of the night, they twined their arms and pointed to her.
Come, sister, come with us.
Please, doctor. Help me.
Begone, demons. You may not enter here. This one is not of you. Go. Go to your master and tell him that I come for him with all the power of heaven. They drew back before me and laughed their low, horrid laugh. I fed the fire and feared them not, for I knew that we were safe within our protections. They could not approach me whilst so armed, nor Madame Mina while she remained within the ring, which she could not leave no more than they could enter. The horses had ceased to moan and lay still on the ground. The snow fell on them softly, and they grew whiter. I knew that there was for the poor beasts no more of terror. And so we remained till until the red of the dawn began to fall through the snow gloom. I was desolate and afraid, and full of woe and terror. But when that beautiful sun began to climb the horizon, life was to me again. At the first coming of the dawn, the horrid figures melted in the whirling mist. The wreaths of transparent gloom moved away and were lost. And there, a short distance away, stood the castle. Castle Dracula.
With the dawn, we see the body of Zigeuner before us dashing away from the river with their wagon. Far off, I hear the howling of wolves. The horses are nearly ready and we're off soon. We ride to the death of someone. God alone knows who, or where, or what, or when, or how it may be.
November 6. It was late in the afternoon when the professor and I took our way towards the east, whence I knew Jonathan was coming. We did not go fast, though the way was steeply downhill, for we had to take heavy rugs and wraps with us. We dared not face the possibility of being left without warmth in the cold and the snow. In a little while, the professor had found a wonderful spot, a sort of natural hollow in a rock, with an entrance like a doorway between two boulders.
See, here you will be in shelter. And if the wolves do come, I can meet them one by one.
He brought in our furs and made a snug nest for me and got out some provisions and forced them upon me. But I could not eat. To even try to do so was so repulsive to me. And much as I would have liked to please him, I could not bring myself to the attempt. He looked very sad, but did not reproach me. Taking his field glasses from the case, he stood on the top of the rock and began to search the horizon.
Look, Madame Mina. Look. Look.
Straight in front of us, and not far off, came a group of mounted men hurrying along. I could see from their clothing that they were peasants or gypsies of some kind. In the midst of them was a cart, and on the cart was a great square chest.
The evening draws nigh.
Do you see Jonathan and the others?
There is no one. Wait! There! Look! Two horsemen follow fast, coming up from the south. It must be John Seward and Mr. Morris. Take the glass. Look, before the snow blots it all out.
Yes, I see them. And look, to the north, it is Jonathan and Arthur.
They are all converging. When the time comes, we shall have the gypsies on all sides.
Every instant seemed an age whilst we waited. The wind came now with fiercer and more bitter sweeps and more steadily from the north. They were all coming to us, the pursuers and the pursued, and the gypsies seemed to hasten with redoubled speed as the sun dropped lower and lower on the mountain tops. Closer and closer they drew. Professor and I crouched down behind our rock and held our weapons ready. I could see that he was determined that they should not pass. One and all were quite unaware of our presence. All at once, I heard Jonathan.
Halt!
And in a great thunder of hooves, Dr. Seward and Mr. Morris rode into the fray.
Quick! Look!
Movement of our parties, The leader of the gypsies gave a command, and his men gathered around the cart. In the midst of this, I could see Jonathan. The singleness of his purpose seemed to overawe the gypsies, and instinctively they cowered aside and let him pass. In an instant, he had jumped upon the cart, and with a strength which seemed incredible, raised the great box and flung it over the wheel to the ground. In the meantime, Quincy Morris had to use force to pass through his side of the ring of skeins. I could see the knives of the gypsies flash as they cut at him. He had parried with his great bowie knife, and at first I thought that he too had come through in safety. But as he sprang to the broken crate, I could see that he was clutching at his side, and that the blood was spurting through his fingers. And he attacked one end of the chest, attempting to pry off the lid with his great bowie knife. The lid began to heave, and the top of the box was thrown back. I saw the Count lying within the box upon the earth, some of which the rude falling from the cart had scattered all over him. He was deathly pale, just like a waxen image, and his red eyes glared. As the eyes saw the sinking sun, the look of hate in them turned to triumph.
And now, my friend, you shall die.
And there came the sweep and flash of Jonathan's great knife. It sheared through the throat, whilst at the same moment, Mr. Morris's bowie knife plunged into the heart. But before our very eyes, and almost in the drawing of a breath, the whole body crumbled into dust and passed from our sight. The castle of Dracula now stood out against the red sky, and every stone of its broken battlements was articulated against the light of the setting sun.
Look at Mina's face.
The sun was now right down upon the mountaintop, and the red gleams fell upon my face so that it was bathed in a rosy light.
Now, God be thanked that all has not been in vain. See, the snow is not more stainless than her forehead. The curse has passed away.
Seven years ago, we all went through the flames, and the happiness of some of us since then is, we think, well worth the pain we endured. In the summer of this year, we made a journey to Transylvania and went over the old ground which was and is to us so full of vivid and terrible memories. It was almost impossible to believe that the things which we had seen with our own eyes and heard with our own ears were living truths. Every trace of all that had been was blotted out. Only the castle stood as before, reared high above a waste of desolation.